Thanks.
Thank you. Hey, how y'all doing? I like this thing, this fedora, yeah. I never get a chance to wear it. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since January 25th, 1981. And for that, I'm very grateful, and I'm privileged to be here tonight and asked to share a little bit of my experience regarding these steps. We're in the middle of the step series. And my wonderful, beautiful lady friends there were arguing whether I'm on step 8 or step 9. And, well, technically I'm on step 8. I'm just going to say step 8 so we can count these things. But it'll probably be a one-size-fits-all thing, you know. Who knows where I'm going with this. And we'll hopefully touch upon the 8th step at some point during this deal, you know. You know what I like about guys have been around? You know, I they say if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it. So over a period of time, whether I knew it or not, looking back on it, I now realize that some things are clearer as you're looking back on it. Now, I'm a little over 32 years sober. And patterns that I didn't even notice, things that I didn't even see, stuff that I even read in the big book that really didn't make any sense. You know, just words on a wall. After 32 years of working it and watching other people's working it, having people succeed, having people fail, seeing how people do, all of a sudden things start making sense. Words that start making sense because it becomes part of your life. You see this stuff and you notice it in yourself. And one of the things I noticed, you know, like for instance, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And it says, if you want what we have, and are willing to go to, if you want what we have, it's like a statement, right? Now, looking back over 32 years, I pretty much lived a life following guys and gals, but for me, the most part, guys who had something I wanted. My life, whether I was 5 years sober, 1 year sober, 10 years sober, even now, 32 years sober, pretty much is still in the pattern of having men in front of me that have 57 years, 60 years, I'm 64, guys that are 84, you know what I mean, in front of me that I follow around and I listen to. Which when I think about it, that's the way I was when I had 1 year. That's the way I was when I had 5 years. That's the way I was never alone, I was never an individual who was without men to follow. I never really thought of it that way, but you know, after 32 years looking back, I am a man who was constantly following other men because I wanted what they had. I guess after a while I spent so much time noticing, and I don't say this in a prideful way at all, that I sponsored a lot of people because, well, the guys I followed, they sponsored a lot of people. And they helped a lot of people. So I sponsored a lot of people. And when you sponsor people, you sometimes concentrate on the guys that seem to be following you. You know, so you say, well, there's a lot of guys following you. You know what I mean? And you're trying to help a lot of people, okay? But at the same time, you realize they may be following you, but you're following some other guy. And all of a sudden these words, they start becoming concrete. They're not just words. Rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed a path. If you want what we have and you're willing to go, there's a we. You develop. As a matter of fact, there's a step before the steps. It says if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're willing to take certain, then you're ready to take certain. You're not even ready unless you have a we. You're not even ready unless you see some man, woman, or group of men and women in here who say, I don't know what that guy has, but I'd like to have his deal. I'd like to follow that guy. I'd like to know what that guy's all about. Because otherwise, you're just sort of following yourself. And I don't know what kind of disease you have, but mine centers in my brain. And I'm not really good when I start following my... I tell myself... I rationalize a lot. I tell myself a lot of rational lies. And I get into trouble. I've never hated somebody that didn't deserve to be hated. I never got in any jam where it wasn't somebody else's fault. I was never to blame. There was somebody always to blame. And the story of my life is they just don't understand and they never will. You know, I mean, that's I'm an if onlyer, a yes butter. You don't know who you're dealing with. Who the hell do you think you are? You'll be sorry for this. I'm a self-pityaholic. I'm all that stuff and 1,000 things more. You know where they say men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol because they are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can't, again, experience a sense of ease and comfort comes at once by taking a few drinks. I'm the guy who drank for the effect because I wanted a sense of ease and comfort because I was restless, irritable, discontent. And guess what? I didn't even know I was restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, I didn't say I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. I just said I need a flipping drink. I didn't know that's the same thing as being restless, irritable, discontent. That was the story of my life. You know, money with money, without money, with the girl, without the girl. I was just one step away from I need a drink. Because she showed up on time, she didn't show up on time. I had a date, I didn't have a date. You know what I mean? I had money, I didn't have money, whatever. Life drove me crazy. You know, whatever insulation the Lord gives regular people so they can withstand traffic. You know what I mean? And the news and billboards and stuff. You know, apparently when I was going down the assembly line, you know, and they were handing out that insulation, somebody said, "Hey, God," and he looked up and I just went by, you know what I mean? And I didn't get that deal, you know, I didn't get it. It was a shoop, you know, screwed from the beginning, you know what I mean? And sure, you're laughing, you don't know what it's like. Yeah. Story of my life, laughing at me, humiliated. So you ever ask yourself things like, so what I noticed is these we, they sort of like, the we that I was following, after a while, after, you know, alcoholics are sort of, we're not that bright. I mean, I was bright on tests, I did well in school, but the truth of the matter is we're really not that bright in a lot of other things. Sometimes we take a lot of, you know how they say in the 12 and 12, we get a new person. I'm one of these guys, I got to tell you something. I don't trust my brain anymore because when I was trusting my brain, I wasn't doing too well. When I started trusting the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the book, the 12 and 12 and what they were telling me in here, I started doing better. So the truth of the matter is I've sort of like come to the decision that I rely on the material more than I rely on my own thinking. I rely so much on the material, on the big book and the 12 and 12, and I assume that it's right, I've really pretty much stopped thinking. It's unnecessary. I don't have to think anymore. All I have to do is memorize the big book and memorize the 12 and 12 to know what's going on. Because when I start thinking, I always get into a jam. You know, and so what happens is I sort of watch what's going on in my own brain and, you know, how I deal with things. And I don't know about you. Did you ever, what I've noticed about these old timers, these guys that have been around for a while, is they may look different. Some may be fat, some may be thin. Some may come from the South, some may come from the North, some may have law degrees, you know, or doctorates, some may, you know, didn't graduate third grade, and they come in all sorts of shapes and sizes, but they all had certain things, they had common characteristics. I'm going to tell you just a few of the characteristics I noticed about these guys that I did not have, you know? And one of the characteristics I noticed about these guys is that they were for the most part, undisturbable. They were anybody here ever go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings? You ever go to discussion meetings? You go to a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings? Have you noticed that this ain't Well People's Anonymous? This is not, you know, Bill Wilson said the next frontier in here is emotional sobriety. It says our problems is that we have unhealthy dependencies. I mean, you know, I when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for the first 15 years, I joined the ranks of the thumb-sucking crybabies. I mean, that's the fellowship I was in. And so one of the things that I noticed is the guys that I followed didn't seem disturbable. They weren't one day happy, one day sad. You know what my deal was? I was like up, and then I was down, and then I was good, and then I was bad, and then I was happy, and then I was sad, and then things was great, and then things were horrible, and that was like the first hour. You know what I mean? You know, because I was sensitive. That's what I told myself. I said, I'm sensitive. He said, no, Russ. He says, great artists are sensitive. You're just touchy. I was touchy. You know what I mean? What does it say? You know what it says in the big book? Because this is what the big book says about us. We got alcoholics in here, right? Now, this isn't me. If you don't like this, you got to write New York and tell them to take us out. What the big book says about us is it says, you know, besides the fact that it says, like, we're childish and we have childish emotions and things. You ever look at children and how they act when they don't get what they want and stuff like that? It says, listen to what it says. It says, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real. You know what that means? That means imaginary crap. It doesn't even have to be real. Have the power to kill. Like for others, they sort of like mosey around and go through life and whatever and don't even notice what's going on. We have like imaginary crap going on in our mind that isn't even happening, and we want to kill ourselves. We want to kill them. We want to kill us. Sober. This is the way we are sober. And let me tell you something. When imaginary crap that isn't even happening is driving you crazy, that's probably not a recipe for a really good life or a lot of really swell relationships. You understand? You know, you're going to have guys getting married for the 15th time. You know what I mean? Linking up with gals that are getting married to the third time because they have something in common because they're both alcoholics. You know what I mean? And that's not going to, it may not work so well. I don't know. You know, I don't want to get anybody upset if they're in here doing that deal. So, you know what I noticed about these guys is they're unperturbable. You know, they seem to be always in the same mood, which is generally a decent mood. You notice that they don't complain a lot. You know, they seem to somehow have their act together. And they seem to be more focused on other people than they're focused on themselves. They don't really, and it doesn't seem like they're doing a whole lot of thinking. They're just sort of gliding through life. And I there's nothing about these guys, you know, these guys that I hung out with. I was attracted to them. I don't even know why I was attracted to them. I felt when I was with these guys, I don't know why, that I was safe. If I was with them, I was safe. I could ask them questions. I have guys that call me up on the phone. They call me and says, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. Ask me a question. They just ask me all sorts of questions. I get asked all sorts of questions. You know, I mean, I don't know. I said, sure, ask me a question. That's the way I was. I used to hang out with them. They'd say, can I ask you a question? Can I sit down? Can I watch? You know, somehow just being with them, I felt there was something about them that was, you know what it was? They were steady. I heard a preacher once talk about, you know, love being steady. I came from an alcoholic home. Anybody here come from an alcoholic home? My mama was an alcoholic. Yeah. Let me tell you something. 3 o'clock, you didn't know what you were coming home to. Mommy could be lying on the front lawn in her negligee. 3 o'clock in the morning, there were 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, there were plates hitting the ceiling, you know, people were yelling curse words. There were parties going on. It was craziness. I didn't know what steady looked like. You know, let me tell you something. You know what love is to me? Love is, I'll tell you one thing. I may not be the father, that goes to all the baseball games and all the football games. I got 3 daughters and a son, and they're all grown now and 6 grandkids. But I want to tell you something. And I don't even know how this happened. Because while other dads were going to, and I don't want you to think I didn't show up at important stuff, you know, like at graduations and things that dads are supposed to be at, you know, but where other dads were not going to meetings because they were going to baseball games and they were going to this and they were going to that, I was going to meetings. So, I mean, I have no idea why my kids respect me or why my kids love me or why I have such a close bond with my gals and with my son. I have no idea why that happened, except the only thing I can tell you is I was steady. They always knew where I was going to be. Unlike my house, okay, I came from a divorced family, they always knew that no matter what was going on in their life, in their world, okay, that I would always be there. You know what it is? You know, they didn't want me as a friend. They didn't want me as a buddy. They had buddies. They didn't want me hanging around. You know what they wanted? They wanted a sober daddy. You know, boys and girls, little boys and girls, they need sober daddies that are always there. They didn't care whether I was there all the time. They just knew that if they needed me, I was there. They never had to worry about me because I was going to either be at an A meeting or I was going to be at home. They always knew where I was going to be and what I was about. And how was I to know? By just being sober and doing that, I was going to engender their love and respect. and have that kind of relationship. How did I know that that was going to happen? I mean, I didn't know that stuff. I was just doing what they say in AA. While other guys weren't doing what they said to do in AA, they said, no, I gotta run around, I gotta miss the meeting, I gotta go with my kids. Never use your kids or your wife or anything as an excuse to miss a meeting or help another alcoholic. Why don't you use them as a reason why to do that deal? Okay? And since the eighth step and the ninth step has to do with relationships, this sort of stuff is important. You ever ask yourself why you're lonely all the time, or why you feel separated all the time, or why you feel so apart all the time, or why you can never make a connection? You know, why it's 3 o'clock in the morning, why you always feel like you're sort of locked in this shell and you're never going to break out, and you know, you're around a lot of people and you're with a lot of people, but you're really not a part of anything. You know, you don't really feel steady. You know, you're sort of like on your own. There's nobody you can really depend upon. It's just sort of like you and the world. The world's kind of a scary place and that kind of deal. No, that's a scary, that's operating out of a weak position. And when you operate out of a weak position, you have the corrosive threat of fear running through you. Because it's you against the world, and no matter what kind of bravado you put up, you somehow, deep down inside, have figured out that the world is a lot bigger and stronger than you are, and there ain't nobody coming to your rescue, except for you. And you're just not up to the job. And I tell a story about being in Great Neck, New York, where I grew up, and and I've told this before, maybe here, but I mean it's worth telling again. I'd be on the football field or the baseball field, and there'd be 12 or 18 kids or whatever, a number of kids, and there'd be two captains, and one captain would say, well, I'll, the captains are usually the real good ball players, and I was always terrible at that deal. Yeah, I was always terrible, and they would start picking the sides. Well, I'll take Fred, and I'll take Joe, and if they took Fred, like, the kids would all be in the middle of the field, so if they said, you know, I'll take you, you would march over to that guy's side, and then the other guy would say, well, I'll take you, and you'd march over that guy's side, and as you pick the guys, you guys have been involved in this, the group gets smaller and smaller, right? And so I'm in the middle of the group, and I'm praying. What am I praying? You know what I'm praying for. What are alcoholics, what are some things that scares alcoholics, I wasn't drinking then, but I was an alcoholic. Because drinking is just something that happens down the road to alcoholics. If you're an alcoholic, you're born an alcoholic, you know? Because alcoholism is something that happens when you're sober. That's why we're all sober tonight, right? Well, that's why we're all at a meeting, because we're alcoholics. You know, our problem isn't drunk. Drunk is something that happens to alcoholics when you have untreated alcoholism. You know what I mean? Alcohol is a drug that alcoholics use to treat alcoholism. You understand what I'm saying? I'm an alcoholic because no woman, no amount of clothes, no cars, no food, although I tried them all, and they work to a certain extent, but they never work quite as well as just a few drinks. You know, I can tell you, the ease and comfort I got just from a quart bottle of Colt 45 malt liquor, okay? Let me tell you something, if it did for you what it did for me, you ain't stopping drinking. Okay, and the only reason I stopped drinking is it stopped working for me. And I got to tell you something. I was on such a roll, I didn't realize it stopped working for me until 10 years down. It started working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me. And I hurt a lot of people. And so now I get rid of the alcohol, which I think is the problem. I think, well, I know what the problem is. The problem is alcohol. Let me tell you something. I wish I could blame everything on alcoholism. Oh, yeah, I screamed at that person because I was drunk. Oh yeah, I was irresponsible because I was drunk. Oh yeah, I hurt their feelings because I was drunk. Oh, I said that because I was, oh, it's alcohol's fault. It's not my fault, it's alcohol's fault. I'm a good guy. Let me tell you something. I've hurt many people, as most people in my life, before and after Alcoholics Anonymous, I've hurt the same way, sober. You know, as a matter of fact, drunk, you know what I did drunk? Drunk, I just laid down on the couch and threw up, you know what I mean? Not paying my bills. You know, not coming through for you, not returning phone calls, ripping up the mail, not coming. I did all that stuff cold stone sober. Getting mad at somebody, a quick mouth, you know, saying stuff. That's sober. That's what I do sober because I'm an alcoholic. Because I don't have that insulation. You know, alcohol, the drinking of the alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. Our real disease centers in our mind, not our body. It has to do with resentments. It has to do with guilt. It has to do with feeling guilty. You know what feeling guilty feels like. Yeah, you know? You know when you tell yourself you're an idiot, you're a jerk, you're stupid, you ought to die and everything like that because you feel so guilty? And maybe you feel guilty because you are guilty. And maybe you feel guilty because you're not guilty. And maybe you just feel guilty. Maybe it's just the wrongdoing. I don't know. Whatever it is, it, deep down inside, it has to do with fear. It has to do with the fact that you're not good enough and you'll never be good enough to be anything because you're a nothing. And I was always a nothing, and it didn't matter that I had a law degree. It didn't matter that I had a three-piece suit. It didn't matter that I was working for the state attorney's office. I was always going to be a nothing. I was always less than. I was never going to be something. I used to put something in my body. It turned me into an almost, and when you're nothing, almost is top of the world. And that's why I drank. Because I went from a nothing to John Wayne personified in 5 seconds. And you know what did that for me? Booze did that for me. And without, and now you're telling me that my problem is booze. Hey, without booze, I would have blown my brains out. So I'm sitting there, and the team is getting less and less, and I'm right in the middle, and it seems, please don't let me be last, because the last thing an alcoholic wants is for people to laugh at him. And it seems to me like I was always picked last. And you know how they pick you. They say things like, oh, do I have to have them? Like they'd rather play with one less, you know what I mean? Now, I thought they just didn't like me. Now, the truth was, I was just a lousy athlete. You know, that's just the truth. But I thought there was just something wrong with me, you know. Embarrassing. So, you know, what happened is the way I would react is the way you react when stuff like that happens, when people are laughing at you and they're right in the middle of the thing and everything like that. And, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you always assume that that kind of humiliation is waiting for you somewhere down the road. Either it's at work or it's at the job. Somewhere along the line, they're going to discover who you really are and they're all going to laugh at you and you're going to be fired. You're never safe. Your job is never safe. Your position is never safe. Your marriage is never safe. You're never safe because you know at some point in time, the clothes are going to be ripped away and they're all going to be laughing at you and say, I knew you were a jerk. I knew you weren't good enough. I knew you weren't smart enough. I knew you were a phony baloney. You know that's going to happen. You know that when you come in here and they say, why don't you chair a meeting? You say, well, I'm not ready, which is alcohol code for I'm scared. They're going to laugh at me. They're going to judge me. I'm stupid. I'm not good enough. You know, I mean, that's your whole life. Your whole life is I'm not good enough. You know, I can't do this deal. You know what a crummy way to go through life. And you look at people that can do this stuff and you say, how does he do it? How does she do it? How do they do that stuff? You know what I mean? And so as they're ripping this thing, as the group is getting smaller and smaller, I'm sitting there and here's what I'm thinking. And I don't even know how this comes. This is like a natural thing. This is my natural way of thinking. This is why this disease is so horrible, because the thing that gets me in trouble is intuitive. It's the way I naturally think. I naturally think alcoholically. To me, you know what it says about alcoholics? It says our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. To me, it makes sense to hate people. It makes sense to blame people. It's natural for me to feel sorry. It is natural for me to be depressed. It is natural for me to feel sorry for myself. It's natural to think that I'm a victim. That is so, it's so natural for me. What this program tells me to do is I got to think unnaturally. It's like using my right hand. The way I think in here, which is toxic, which will kill me, is like using my right hand. It feels comfortable to feel sad. It feels comfortable to be scared. It feels comfortable to be angry. It feels comfortable to be mad all the time. It feels comfortable to always think what's going to happen to me. It feels comfortable to say, why did I do that? Why are they saying that? You know, if everything that's bad that happens to my life all the time that I think of, all that stuff feels comfortable to me. You know what that I call that? That's my life. That's the way I think. That's my way of life. I come in here. I listen to you guys in discussion meetings. You know what I say? Man, they're just like me. Which relieves it a little bit, because I thought I was the only one who thought that way. I thought I was the only one who acted that way. That's why I constantly think, well, what's the use of talking to anybody? Nobody will ever understand, because I don't even understand. Some guy talks from the podium, he says, man, I've never heard it put in words. That's exactly the way I feel. But I didn't know I even felt that way until that guy talked that way, and now I know that's what's going on in my life. And at least you can put some words on it now, and put some clothing on it, and it becomes real, it becomes visible. And you see, that's me. And it must have been him, because he's talking like he's reading my thoughts, but he's not like that anymore. I'm over here and he's over there. And you're trying to figure out how to get over there and you can't get over there. You know? I mean, that's the deal. And so I'm sitting there in the middle of the group. And I'm saying somehow it occurs to me that the only way I can protect myself against this humiliation, because I'm hating them, I'm hating the world, I'm hating myself, I wish they were dead, and I figure the only way to, as they're laughing at me, to protect myself is act like it doesn't bother me. It's killing me, but I'm going to act like it doesn't bother me. So in other words, I'm dying on the inside, but I'm laughing, like they're laughing at me, I'm laughing. I know this is kind of hard to explain unless you've been there. I'm laughing as if I'm standing where they are. I mean, like it doesn't bother me. Like I'm saying, that doesn't bother me. You're not bothering me. Because I, my way of laughing like them at me while I am me is sort of like me saying, well, I'm actually where you are. I'm not even there where I am at. And somehow that built some sort of protective wall, because I knew if I started showing, if I started crying or running away, I'd really be humiliated. So I built that little wall, that little one-inch wall, so that they could not see how I felt. They wouldn't know how I felt. And how did I know that that wall that seemed like it was a protective covering for me, because I didn't know how to handle that, would over the next 18 and 20 years become 3 feet thick, so that nobody could ever know what's going on inside of me or why I act the way I acted? And you want to know something? It got to the point where it became so thick, I didn't even know how I felt the way I felt or why I felt the way I felt or what was going on inside of me, and I couldn't even figure me out. All I know is sometimes I do crazy shit things and stupid things and bad things and feel bad about it and not even know why I do it, and then try to figure out, you know, how to react to it and how to justify it and how to blame. And when you get in that situation, drinking helps a lot. And I used to drink a lot, because men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol, that they're restless, irritable, and discontented. And when you're that way, and you're that way naturally, and you know of no other way of acting, okay, you are going to be restless, irritable, discontent. You're not going to have good relationships. Your marriage, nothing's going to really work out for you, no matter how hard you try, because you're just bent in that direction. It's just going that way for you. And that's part of this disease, which is spiritual, a spiritual disease, because we're in constant state of dis-ease. So let me read that. With that in mind, let's get into the solution here. Let me read a couple of things here. Because right now, what I want to do is I want to focus on the deal. I want to focus on the only thing that's ever worked for me. I'm going to read a couple things, just some things right out of this book, the book Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a point here. We're going to see whether you can figure out the point, okay? You're going to have to stay awake for this one. This ain't going to be soon fed. We're going to see whether you can figure this out. It has to do with that. You know what it has to do with? It has to do with that steady thing. It has to do with that steady thing. You know what I mean? Remember that steady thing I was talking about? One of the books they read three primary books in the first 4 years of Alcoholics Anonymous. One book they read was the book of James. The other book they read was 1 Corinthians 13. And the other book they read, as a matter of fact, the first AA meeting was the Sermon on the Mount. When the Sermon on the Mount ended, and if you want to know what the Sermon on the Mount said, you know what the Sermon on the Mount was? This book. You read this book, you're reading the Sermon. You read the Sermon on the Mount, it's in this book, okay? That's right. The guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, The guys who wrote the Bible stole everything from Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? And that's the way it worked, okay? So that's it. He sponsored 12, they sponsored 12, a bunch of people sponsored 12, and all of a sudden there was Alcoholics Anonymous. So in any event, so here's the deal. But in the last part of the book, the carpenter said, in the last part of Sermon on the Mount, this is what he says. I figure a man who hears what I say, he said a whole lot of things, it was a sermon, and does what I say as a man who built his house upon a rock, and the wind came, and the floods came, but the house stayed because it was built upon a rock. And then he says, I judge a man who hears the things I say, but does not do them, as a man who builds his house upon sand, because the winds came and the floods came and the house fell, and great was the fall because it was built upon sand. So there's something about building your house on a rock as opposed to building your house upon sand. And guess what? And you haven't figured this out, then you have some drinking to do. You build your house upon your own thinking and your own way of doing things. You're building it upon sand. You're building it upon sand. And you'll do good in AA for 3 weeks or 3 months or 3 years or 13 years, whatever it is. But the wind will come and the rain will come and something will happen and you will fall like that house fell on the sand. And you won't even know why it happened. Because you'll think you've been doing this thing and you weren't doing this thing at all. Because you weren't building it on the rock. Okay, now, here we go. Yeah, it's preaching. That's okay. Won't kill you. Didn't kill me. This last 18 years bothered some old timers, you know what I mean? Well, you know what I say? Whenever you disturb, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. You know, I pray that I disturb at least 10% of the people in here. Because you know why? They need to be disturbed. They need to wake the hell up. Because if I disturb them, that means there's something going on in them that's disturbing them. And I can promise you, if I'm disturbing them because of what I'm saying in Alcoholics Anonymous, that ain't nothing compared to the guys that are waiting for them out there. Because the same stuff that's disturbing them, what they're hearing about here, is going to get them drunk out there. Because the only difference is I care about them, the guys out there really don't. So you want to get to a point where in AA, nothing disturbs you. Nothing bothers you. You're not botherable. Because you get to the point where you're not botherable in AA by what people say and with that kind of stuff, you got a shot in the outside world. You better pray you find a sponsor that disturbs you. Says stuff that's disturbing to you. You know, you get one of these sponsors, you know, that they're always patting you on the back and always telling you good things and never make you feel bad because they want to be your friend. Man, I'll tell you, you're gonna be a thumb-sucking crybaby when you get out there and they start pounding on you. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day as we place the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chopping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks important in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, i.e., I don't have much. I don't have much. Okay? But I have a fortune. Here we go. He has a fortune in friendships, in courage, in self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man. Here it comes. The love and understanding of a gracious God. Love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get that, then you're ready to take certain steps. Not if you want the car, if you want the job back, you want to get back in the big bed, you want the girl, you want sex, you want all the stuff you cry for. If you want what we have, this is what you know what this guy had? He had nothing. Except what he said he had there. Except what he said he had there. That's what he had. And you want to know something? That's what they all had. That's why we have first things first. See to it, your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. You know, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all other things will be added unto you. That's what where first things first came from. It's all about him. Here we go to the next one. Sometimes it's nice sort of reading the big book once in a while. No, it really is. It is. Let me see. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts God and clean house. Let no alcoholic say that he cannot recover unless he has his family back. this just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. It is not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to know this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. I guess that's why they say there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. I guess that's why they say, why they say on the A, B's, and C's, that they read at every meeting, you cannot manage your own life. No human power can relieve this deal. Only God couldn't. What if he was sought? I guess that's why they say all that stuff. You know, it's important for me to read this stuff. And the reason it's important for me to read this stuff is because you ain't getting anywhere in this deal unless ultimately you get focused on the only thing that's important. And the good thing is the only thing is only one thing. It's not a lot of things, okay? It's very simple. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in a world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us, and humbly rely upon him does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Hey, you know what this is? This is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the program. This is alcohol. I don't know what you're hearing in your meetings. I don't know what they're saying in your meetings. I mean, what are they saying? Things like 90 and 90, and they're saying like, just don't drink and go to meetings. And yeah, I mean, all that stuff is good stuff. I'm not going to put that down. It's like motherhood and apple pie. But this is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is what separates the men from the boys. The guys honestly and absolutely finally get this stuff. This is the meat and potatoes. We're already past the third step. We're past the fifth step. We're past the sixth step where it separates from them and the boys. We're past the seventh step, you know, where we've gone through all that and we realize, right, now we're on the eighth step. We're on the big time stuff. We're going to start looking at people differently. You know, people aren't going to bother us. You know, we're going to have an incredible life. You know, you're going to have a life. You know, I can tell you this. If you're botherable, if you go to sleep tonight and there are things bothering you, if you wake up in the morning and things are bothering you, if you've been talking about stuff today that's bothering you, you know, if you got stuff on your mind that's bothering you, if you're anxious or disturbed and you start thinking about the same deal over and over again that's bothering you, I got news for you. Chances are it has something to do with people. Or maybe a person. Or maybe a group of people. You know what I mean? And you know something? You don't even know how to stop thinking about them because they're living rent-free in your head. It affects your actions. It affects how you feel about yourself. It affects your relationship with everything. And you know what the problem is? You don't even know how to stop thinking about it. You can't stop it. You can't stop that any more than you can stop drinking. Well, you want to know what it says in the big book? I'll tell you what it says. It says this sort of stuff. We're selfish. We're self-centered. That's the root of our problems. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others. They retaliate. We usually don't think they have a reason for it, but it's usually because we set it in motion. Because we did it. An alcoholic is an extreme example. You're an extreme example. You guys of self-will run riot. I understand you don't think so, but says, but usually don't think so. Above all, we must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Doesn't even bruise us, kills us. God makes that. There he is again. There he's showing up again. God makes that. That's probably why he's all through the steps there. God makes that possible. There it is. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he's not the higher power. He's the highest power. Being all powerful, I mean, with my problems and my personality, I need the highest power. I don't need some deputy assistant, flunky to the president power, you know. I need the main banana. I don't need the biggest God in the universe. I need the God that's outside the universe, you know, who invented the universe. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. So according to the big book, you have to, number one, keep close to him. Well, it would be probably a good idea to know who he is, figure out that deal, and perform his work well, which means you probably want to figure out what his work is he asked for you and then what you need to do to perform it, right? I mean, listen, you can write New York, but this ain't me. This is in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, so until they take it out, I'm going to be reading it. You know, so I don't see anything in there about getting laid. No, we're all adults here. I don't see anything about chasing that stuff. You know, when I go to an AA meeting, you know, this thing, the step eight is about relationships. Relationships with your son, with your daughter, with your mother, with your father, with the people in AA, with your community. You know, go to an AA meeting these days and they talk about relationships, you know you're gonna be talking about what? Romance. My boyfriend, my girlfriend, when am I going to find somebody? Which, by the way, the 12 of 12 says is the worst thing for us to concentrate on. I don't know if you remember step 7, where it says, never did we have enough romance, money, power, prestige, and romance. I mean, you've been thinking about that, you know, for what are you, 30 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old, 60 years old? You're still watching that same stuff? You're still reading that same stuff? You're still dreaming about that same stuff? How's that feel? How's it been? It's been working differently for you? It's working. I know it hurt when you were 18. I know it hurt when you were 26. I know it was killing you when you were 35. What, it's better now when you're 47? That sort of thinking, that sort of concentrating on that kind of crap is helping you? So you go to an AA meeting so you can find some other people that are doing the same thing so you can talk about it more and figure out if you get that straight, that would be the answer to your problem? Because otherwise, you might have to do what Russell says, focus on God, maybe go to church, do the Bible study thing and everything, and focus on him, and then you're probably never going to get laid. Yeah. Well, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. Okay, here we go. Well, I said to my sponsor, when am I going to be financially secure? One of my mentors, when am I going to be financially secure? He said, never. I said, it says in the big book, it says, I'll be financially secure. He says, you're never going to be financially. He says, it doesn't say that. He says, it says it. Right? He says, it doesn't say that, Russell. He says, I read it. He says, take it out. And it says, fear of people and financial insecurity will leave you. He says, you see, Russ, you'll always be broke, but it just won't bother you. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing. You know what I mean? I didn't like that either. I want to know when I got the yacht. Isn't that what happens? You go to AA, get the yacht? Well, maybe you'll get the yacht. Maybe you won't get the yacht, but it won't bother you. You know, some people get the yacht and they're still bothered. You know why? Because they're botherable. Yeah. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing. What footing? The footing on depending 100% and focusing on him. Established on that footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, and as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. There we go again. And then, you know, I heard this the other day. You know, sometimes what does it say here? The great fact, we've found much of heaven. And we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. How'd you like that deal to happen? You know, when you get rocketed in the fourth dimension, which you had not even dreamed, you want to know something? You're on good relationships with everybody. You know what I find? I don't have, for the most part, and nobody does this perfectly. I'm not going to say, look at me, I'm perfect. I never had trouble with anybody. That wouldn't be true. But I can tell you something. Compared to the way I used to be, my life is pretty much devoid of, you know, who does he think he is? They can't do that to me. You know, why is this happening to me? You know, I can't believe they're doing this to me. My life is pretty much devoid of having people living rent-free in my head. There's just a lot of empty space up there, you know what I mean? Two neurons playing tennis or something, I don't know. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have found we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today. What's the central fact of your life today? No, you ought to ask yourself this. What's the most important thing to you? What do you think about all the time? What do you read about all the time? What do you talk about all the time? Who are your friends? What are they talking about all the time? That's how you find out what the central fact of your life is today. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. That's the central fact of their lives today. It was all about God and what he was doing for them in their lives. That was, you know, it's like the Mother Teresa thing. The guy from the New York Times followed around. He says, I wouldn't do what you do for $1 million. She said, neither would I. It's like me talking to the guy in the Denny's, you know, after the meeting. And he looks at me, the young guy, his first meeting. He says, well, that was pretty good, but what do you do for fun? And I didn't have the heart to tell him I was having a great time. Just being with him. Just talking to him and talking about what God had done for me in my life. Bill Wilson said, he said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just got to keep talking about it and telling other people. These guys were on fire for God. They couldn't help but share it. The problem is they were sharing with alcoholics, and all alcoholics want to do is shit on God and piss on God and get mad at people that are talking about God, and they were on fire for God. And the good thing is they stayed sober for 30 and 40 years, and they lived to good purpose. While the other ones just bounced around the rooms, trying to figure out how to have 1 foot into God and 1 foot into the Cadillac. Have to have their cake and eat it too. You know what I mean? So here we go. This is the last part, the last reading. There we go. Let me see whether I can find this thing. Okay. Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude towards that power, and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. Once confused and baffled by a seeming futility of existence, they showed the underlying reason why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them when many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives. They present a powerful reason why one should have faith. Well, that's preachy, huh? It's preachy. Yeah, it's better when you read it, because when you read it, it doesn't sound preachy, right? I mean, when you don't read it by yourself, it doesn't sound like when I read it, it sounds like I'm preaching, right? Well, he's preaching. But you know, he's not preaching, he's sharing something with you that's going to save your life. We asked ourselves this. Are some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as were the ancients about the realm of the material? It goes on to say the following. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. You know, we have this attitude in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I guess it's because we just naturally want to do it our own way, so we naturally want to think this, that we don't think Alcoholics Anonymous takes a stand on atheism. You know, Dr. Bob said if you're an atheist, an agnostic, or of any other form of intellectual pride that keeps you from the plain thing we're saying in this group, I feel sorry for you. We think that because they wrote a chapter to the agnostic, which basically says this sort of thinking has to be abandoned, that they said, it's okay to be agnostic. It's okay to be atheistic. It's okay to not believe. That's not what AA is about. They wrote a chapter to the agnostic to tell the agnostics they got to stop thinking that way. Now, does that mean that you can get kicked out of here? No. Because the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. But let me tell you something. At the end of this book, it says, we'll see some of you, what, in the fellowship of the Spirit. The fellowship of the Spirit is different than the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There may be a different requirement than just the not drinking club on that deal, okay? When we alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it is there. For faith and a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found that the great reality deep down within us, in the last analysis, it was only there that he may be found. It was so with us. We could only clear the ground a little. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. You know, when you're involved in, you listen, you can do the steps mechanically. You know, you want to know how to do the A step? I'm not here to talk to you about, you know, because you can read the book and go to your sponsor and talk about making a list that comes from the fourth step. I'm not here to tell you to make a list. You can do that in a treatment center, will tell you how to do the A step, tell you how to do the fourth step. You can do these things mechanically. Rarely a person gets out of a treatment center that doesn't get to do step three, step four. They have them do these things, get a sponsor. You can mechanically do all this stuff. Have you been hanging around Alcoholics Anonymous? Have you seen, you know something? Most of the people I know that are drinking after a few years of sobriety have worked all the steps. They're only missing one thing. One thing. God. You know why? Because they're God. They've always been God. They'll always be God. They're not relying upon God. They'll do the steps, because when they do the steps, then they can get out of here and they can manage their lives because they don't need it because they're not drinking anymore. But the guys that make it for the 20 years, the 30 years, you know, the serious deal, you know, the steps are an adjunct. They're a tool. There's something we do. They're important to clear the ground away and the obstacles too, but there's only one thing that's important in this deal. See to it your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And I got to say something. The believers, the people who develop belief, they'll do every one of these steps. Whether they go to the step meeting, whether they don't go to the step meeting, whether they have a good sponsor, whether they have a bad sponsor, whatever it is, if they get the God thing, they'll do every single one of these steps. And the non-believers, doesn't matter what means they go to, doesn't matter, they ain't doing this. It ain't going to happen. Or if it does happen, if you think happening means they're not drinking club, you just don't drink, it's going to happen, but they're going to look a little bit differently than the ones that are focusing on him. They're not going to have the stuff these guys have. They're not, because you know why? Because they said, rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. That's what they said. If you follow our path, you get what we got. They didn't say, do whatever hell you want to do, and you'll get what we got anyway. So God bless you. Next week, we'll talk about something else.